Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
It's just a dumb buyout. It's bad athletic directoring. It's bad, and it's just the business. It's not just Colorado. It's all of them. Stop acting like they have all the power.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
I say do the same thing they did to the fish. It's time for those lead weights to go down the pipe. You know, you got to swallow some lead weights, you know?
And SI's Pat Forty.
Wetzel has so rigged this thing that he actually wanted to count the Fat Bear results in the race for the case.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we've got an addition for you. A lot happening, firings all over the country, the decay of Red River. We're going to try to spice up the Jimbo-Nick feud no matter what. I don't believe Nick Saban's forgotten or forgiven.
Kidding?
Weird week. All the games we circled as big games are not big games anymore.
That's right.
It's Fat Bear week. That's right. Get ready for that. That's coming.
Back by popular demand.
I'm going to make a song go viral.
Oh, no.
Yeah, wait. Not telling you. We got all sorts. Oh, and the fish scandal. The fish cheating scandal. So we're going to get to that. Scandal. There's a lot. My rundown here is to tell you how much I prepared. Like, I did not, like, break down how the TCU offense will go against the Kansas defense this weekend. I did listen to a fish cheating podcast.
Well, good.
All right. Okay. So,
you know,
yeah, there was some effort put in there.
We tend to go with our strengths, and I'd say things involving cheating and controversy and anger fit in well.
It's gotta be it. Gotta be it. But let us start with Wisconsin.
Yeah.
We taped our pod Sunday morning, and we kind of knew Carl Durrell could get fired at Colorado. We'll just talk to him, but we weren't holding the pod for that. Colorado been horrible. We did not see Paul Chryst being fired on Sunday. Wisconsin, a program that seems to move slowly in everything, that hadn't fired a football coach since 1989. And I think you had this, Ross, had not fired a basketball coach since 1995. Moves to fire one day after Brett Bielema walks into Madison like he still owns the place and just steamrolls him. Chryst had a great run for a while there. Big Ten West titles in the first 5 years, 4-10 win seasons. Since then, just 15-10 overall. Team looked terrible this year. But thoughts, I'll start with you, Pat. Thoughts on making this move that quickly? I'm not saying it wasn't the right move or the inevitable move. It just felt like let's go. Can't deal with it one more second. We'll pay you $11 million to get out of here.
Yeah, cold move, disrespectful move, despite the athletic director using the words respect and admiration for Paul Chryst in the statement announcing this. I mean, Paul Chryst is as Wisconsin as it gets, even more than Jim Leonard, who everybody, oh, he's a Wisconsin guy. Well, Paul Chryst was born in Madison, lived for 6 years within a couple of blocks of the stadium while his dad was an assistant coach, played at Wisconsin, assistant coach at Wisconsin, head coach at Wisconsin, ditched Pittsburgh in like 90 seconds to come back to Wisconsin to be the head coach there, and won a lot of games, a lot of games there. Everybody talking, oh, last year was just, they were 9-4 last year, and you're Wisconsin. You're not Ohio State. You're not Alabama. You're not Georgia. You're Wisconsin, 9-4. Okay, maybe it wasn't ideal, but it was 9-4. And then you start this year. Yeah, this year's bad. 2-3, and it's a bad 2-3. They have no good wins. You get trucked by Bielema. You lose at home to Washington State. So, but, I mean, to not let Paul Chryst try to turn it around? Paul Chryst, of all people, to not let him get a chance to finish this thing or at least, you know, finish a season, that to me tells me a lot about where college football is, where it's gone, where it will continue to go. Money keeps going up. Desperation keeps going up. We must win. And I just would say beware what you get next. It better be good, because one thing you hear, you know, from the fans or whatever, other people are like, you know, if you really were watching what's happening, you would have seen the problems with the recruiting infrastructure and this and that and da 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 da. Those are the same things I heard at Texas when they ran out Mack Brown. Then they brought in Charlie Strong, who went 16-21. Same things I heard at Texas when they got rid of Tom Herman, who was 32-18. Well, how's Steve Sarkisian doing? He's 8-9. Same things we heard at Auburn 2 years ago when they ran out Gus Malzahn, whose last 3 years were intolerable. He was 23-13. Brian Harsin's 9-9, and they're firing him anytime now. So if you're going to do it, you better get it right, because you're just costing yourself a lot of money and hoping you can replicate something.
Yeah, we have a lot of good examples of this. And you mentioned some good ones, Pat. And also I'll throw in there Bo Pelini at Nebraska when they fired him. His record and all his stats are actually fairly similar to Paul Chryst's stats at Wisconsin. He had 3 division titles, 7 bowl trips out of 7 full years, 6 bowl wins, 3 top 15 finishes, and he won 72% of his game. So it reminds me a lot of Pelini. It also, I want to throw in there A&M and Kevin Sumlin, which I believe Jimbo Fisher now has the exact same record at this time that Kevin Sumlin had in his fourth year or whatever it is Fisher's in. Yeah, it's, you know, be careful what you wish for. Grass isn't always greener, right? The next hire isn't always going to work. Sometimes it's like okay to win 8 games. It's okay to win 8 games every now and then. Like, you'll be okay. So it was a shocker. I think we all kind of knew the Carl Durrell thing was probably going to come at some point in the season or maybe after the season. But this one just, you know, every year feels like you have one of these that just like comes out of nowhere, like a shocking one. And this one strikes me, obviously, this one is the shocker so far and probably will be, I would guess, the most surprising of the cycle. But I wonder if this wasn't thought about a little more. Jim Leonard feels like he's a guy that could have had other head coaching jobs in the past, maybe, and he stayed at Wisconsin. And you wonder if this was always kind of somewhat a plan to give Jim Leonard a shot. You know, he's got, 7 games, and you got to think if he goes like 5-2 or something or better that he might just get that job. So this feels like it has a little pre-planning that maybe happened with an eye toward Leonard being the new coach.
Okay. I don't disagree with you on that. But so this, like this, the Jim Leonard, okay, give him a shot, all that. They just lost 34-10 to Illinois. Are you that excited about the defensive coordinator? They gave up 304 yards. And now, you know, I mean, it's just sort of a funny thing. It's one thing if they're losing, like, put it this way, if you're Iowa's defensive coordinator, you're like, hey, man, it ain't our fault. Okay, we're doing a pretty good job over here. What do you want? What do you want out of that? I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I think they were, for whatever reason, this suggests to me there was a lot of people tired of Paul Chryst, and they weren't just sitting there walking into the season going, oh, yeah, we're really happy with him. Like last year, they went 9-4. They got off to a tough start. They lost to Penn State. They lose to Notre Dame. They lose to Michigan. They're 1-3. And then they win, including beating a top 10 Iowa team. They went on the road at Purdue. They go on a big win streak. Look really, really impressive. Climb all the way to 14th the poll. They lose at Minnesota. And then they beat Arizona State in a bowl game. I mean, like, yeah, not a great season, but you come into this and say, hey, fire your coordinators, change this, do something to just dump Paul Chryst 5 weeks in. Stunning. That said, I don't know. I mean, look, you're getting paid this much money and the team doesn't look good. The offense doesn't look good. I can kind of see it both ways. But I would be very careful with that and say, where are we? What exactly are we doing? This was a solid coach. This was not Carl Durrell, where you're losing every game. You're 0-5 and you're losing by 30 points. And you're literally at that point, you're saying, are the kids on the team, the fans that do show up, deserve better than this? We are non-competitive. Carl Durrell, fire him 5 games in for just complete incompetence. But here you're sitting there going, man, I don't know. I mean, he turned around a season a year ago when he's 1-3. And I mean, they were winning games impressively last year.
I get the feeling they didn't want to give him a chance to turn around.
Yeah. That's usually it. Fire him now before you get that win and it delays it. So I think somewhere in there, you're done because, yeah, you're 1-3 last year on October 2nd. They beat Illinois 24-0. They beat Army. They beat 24-14, whatever. They beat Purdue by 17. They beat Iowa by 20. They beat Rutgers by 49. They beat Northwestern by 28. They beat Nebraska by 7. Like, they're rolling on, and they have a shot at winning the West, and they lose that Minnesota game at Minnesota and don't make the Big Ten championship game. But other than that, you're right where Wisconsin's supposed to be, and you get a rematch against Michigan that beat you. But you'd get a rematch, and they only beat you by a few touchdowns. It's better than what Iowa gets absolutely steamrolled, right? So, interesting move. Obviously, this is a program that has gotten to be very good. We've talked about in the playoff era they would have had, if we had this playoff extending back, they would have hosted three playoff games in Madison. It's a very good program. I hope there aren't Wisconsin fans who think that they should win the national championship. I hope there's not Wisconsin fans that think we should be able to beat Ohio State every year. But it is very good. But clearly this is a program that has some interest behind it that are saying, I'm not really feeling good about 9-4 and just winning the West. So what's realistic? Is Jim Leonard that guy, or do you get somebody else? Obviously he has the inside track, but is this a place where a coach I would think would be pretty interested in? Because I think there's a lot going for it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going for it, but it is not self-sustaining, automatic, you're winning 10, 11 games every year. I mean, if that's the thought, then they might be deluding themselves. But I think kind of what they're hoping is that Jim Leonard could be their Kirby Smart. If you go to where Georgia, when Georgia pushed out Mark Richt, it was successful and won a lot of games and was a great guy. Nobody liked Mark Richt. It was like, we are sure this assistant coach who has never been a head coach is going to be a rock star. And you go and get him, and it worked out. That's what they're hoping with Jim Leonard. Or the other alternative, we talked about this, this has been discussed at least, and I wrote about this some this week, is are you trying to get in on a Lance Leipold derby? The Kansas coach who's, 5-0 there, which is virtually impossible.
And coached at what, Whitewater?
Deep Wisconsin, yeah, deep Wisconsin ties from the state, was an absolute D3 coaching legend in the state. And look, people, I wrote, athletic directors are always looking for a formula that they can repeat and replicate. Could he be their Bo Ryan? Is he the guy who was an absolute legend in the state on a lower level, and you give him that shot and he continues to win? I don't know. Again, I think they want to give Leonard a chance first, but if the next 6 weeks or so don't go well, I wouldn't be shocked if they won in on Lance Leipold. But as far as just expectation and identity, I think Wisconsin has a right to say we should be at or near the top of the Big Ten West every year. Win certainly more than we lose, have a chance to play in the Big Ten championship game. Maybe every once in a while we can win the Big Ten championship, but don't count on it. So that would be my expectation for Wisconsin.
Who would have thought we'd be here talking about a bidding war derby for the Kansas football coach?
Yeah.
But here we are on October 4th. Yeah, talking about the biggest name, maybe, or one of the biggest names in this carousel, this cycle, being Lance Leopold in his Kansas Jayhawks. So, but here we are. But yeah, maybe it certainly would be if Jim doesn't work out. It makes a lot of sense for to Lance to come on to a place in a state that he's obviously very familiar with.
If you're Lance or Matt Rhule or any of these guys that are kind of gonna maybe have their choice. Let's say you're Lance and you have your choice. Do you take Nebraska or do you take Wisconsin?
Whew, that's a good question. I would probably lean Wisconsin. More modern success. Same, pretty similar levels of fan fervor. I mean, they're putting 80,000 in there and they care. Nebraska is a football monolith. They like, you know, some women's volleyball and some other things, but it's really a football school. Wisconsin, they're good at a lot of stuff, frankly. They're good at basketball. They're good at hockey. You know, there's some other things there. So if you want a school that is just totally devoted to winning in football above everything else, that might be the play.
There's no Bucks or Packers, right?
There's no Bucks or Packers. No. So, but I don't know. Personally, I'd rather live in Madison than Lincoln. Give me
Yeah. Go to Nebraska. Yeah, I would. I think I would pick Wisconsin too, but
in football terms.
But that's sure. That's a tough one though. It's almost kind of a toss up because I think the way Nebraska spins on football, and especially in the NIL era, I think might be the better job actually.
There's a lot of that stuff going in. The NIL spending, the transfer portal, to me, both of those things can help Nebraska. Their number one problem is proximity to talent. Obviously, Madison's closer. It's an easy drive to Chicago and the west suburbs, and obviously got Milwaukee and stuff. I mean, you know, Wisconsin put out more players than Nebraska as a state, and you know, but the Chicago northeast Illinois area is just so strong. Yeah, and you know, into Michigan and Indiana and all that, but you just closer. But Nebraska, you know, if you're paying, that should help. If you're getting guys on the bounce or they're just looking for who can get me to the league, do you have the facilities? I think Nebraska, you know, should really jump the portal hard, and maybe their recruiting classes should be like 15 kids a year, and yeah, that's it. And then the rest should just be, we're gonna gobble up. All right. You did this. You wanted warm. You wanted, you know, look, come up here. Let's get to work. If they can settle it, maybe it matters less. You're still playing in a massively huge deal, and there's probably money laying on the table for everybody. So I don't know. Interesting decision for those two, because those two schools will be potentially fighting, although it could just be Jim Leonard. But look, at Northwestern, at Michigan State. You know,
chance to win,
soft landing or soft takeoff for Jim Leonard. And then they get Purdue, Maryland home, at Iowa. Then there's an at Nebraska and then there's a Minnesota. So I think you're right, Pat. He didn't want to sit there and say, oh, geez, the guy who's won 6-1 going down the end. And here we are again at 8-4. And yep, we're off to the Outback Bowl or whatever.
Yep. You see that a lot, too. I remember when I was a beat writer covering LSU, that was the thing that happened a couple years with Les Miles before he was actually fired. Four games in, is they kept on, especially the year before that. I remember 2015. They
2-2, right?
You know, they were about to pull the trigger. Well, 2016, yeah, they were 2-2. But 2015, you know, they got off to that crazy kind of good start. And then they completely collapsed and had basically decided to fire him after one game, but didn't fire him. And that's right, the problem. Then in the season finale, he upset Texas A&M. They carried him off the field.
People
and
chanting,
lo and behold, he was remained the coach. So you got to pull the trigger when you decide to do it, or you know, or they could stick around. And that does seem like that is part of what happened here. They didn't want necessarily him going on a run and then kind of being forced to keep him, I guess.
All right, Colorado fired Cara Durrell. The best result of the season so far for Colorado was a 43-20 loss to Arizona. They're 0-5. I mean, this had to happen. This is not a functioning football team right now. Look, they pulled Durrell out of the NFL. They were screwed, Colorado. Michigan State, if you recall, 3 years ago, Mark D'Antonio, for reasons I'm still not sure, decides to retire after National Signing Day, holds the kind of program hostage, finally retires. Michigan State's desperate. They go out and get Mel Tucker with like a $5 million deal that now looks like a bargain. Colorado's got to look for a coach like late February, and they don't have the money that Michigan State does to just throw it at somebody. So they get Cara Durrell. Why they gave him a huge buyout, I don't know. My God. Again, coaches' agents just ski masking these ADs. Where was Carl Durrell going?
Right. Who are they bidding against? They were bidding against themselves, is what they were. I mean,
guy was an NFL assistant. Yeah. Anyway, he comes in. He had like a couple, his moment or two. But it's, you know, now they're sitting there saying, we ain't going to be last on this coaching carousel. We're going to be fine.
Right.
What, Pat, you grew up in Colorado, so you can explain this, but obviously Boulder, awesome, awesome city for like me. I don't know if it's great for 18-year-old football players, but it's kind of like the, you know, let's go to the farmer's market, then the game kind of town instead of just the game is everything. What's Colorado? I mean, look, they won the title a long time ago. Eric Bieniemy, hello, sitting there at the Chiefs. Yeah. Be pretty interesting. But what is Colorado capable of, and what kind of coach can they get, and should they just throw it all at Bieniemy?
Well, yeah, it's a weird job. There's no doubt about it. If you could get an Eric Bieniemy interested in it still, yeah, that'd be attractive, I would think. As you said, it's a great college town. It's a, you know, a great place to live. It is very far from a football hotbed. The football hotbed is circles around the Broncos, period. It's a very pro state, and Boulder itself is, you know, not super sports attuned other than outdoor sports.
Yeah, mountaineering, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah, it's like hiking, biking,
yeah,
skiing. Colorado is a national skiing powerhouse. I knew that. I can tell you that. Colorado and Utah win the NCAA skiing championships every year. But as far as football, there's just, you know, there's not people that give a lot of money to the school to be good at football. They don't, you know, spend lavishly on facilities. The state, Denver, produces some players for sure. Colorado Springs occasionally produces some players, but it's not like, you know, you have to go to California and Texas a lot to get your guys. Going into the, you know, that they were big in Texas when they're in the Big 12. They've tried to shift a little bit more to California and the Pac-12. They're in a, you know, they're in a place in the Pac-12 where it's a pretty good competitive opportunity, but they're never going to compete for a national championship again, I don't think. That would be extremely hard to replicate. They had some very good coaches who did some incredible recruiting, probably took in some pretty rough characters for a while. But, you know, they had a very good run, and it's going to be hard to ever replicate that again.
I was talking to some Colorado people the last couple of days up there, booster types, and about kind of what happened and where they go from here. And there's a lot of there's certainly a lot of interest there in going back to the quote Big Eight or, you know, what's left of the Big Eight and the Big 12. So there's a lot of people there that wish. I think they would be more successful there from a recruiting standpoint and would enliven the old kind of rivalries and get them more, you know, they're more like maybe like-minded schools compared to, you know, the Washingtons and the Oregons, and you trade them for the Kansases and the Oklahoma States, and they're more like those schools. But so I thought that was kind of interesting. I think there's a lot of people there also, like Dan had mentioned, scratching their head over why Carl Durrell had the buyout that he had. $11.4 million is the buyout. It's the second, you know, that we've had five coaches so far, five overall, right? Yeah, just the power five. We have not had any G5s pull the trigger yet. So we have Frost, who leads it all with $15 million buyout. Durrell is second, 11.4. Durrell is second. Jeff Collins, 11.3. Paul Chryst settled down to 11. And then Herm Edwards is around 8. So we're already up to $56.7 million. Last year was believed to be a record at $94 million in buyout money. But we're already up to $56.7 million. It's astonishing. And I don't know when we have a correction. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't happen. But it's just... It's, you know, Durrell's firing and Durrell's buyout is a good window into this buyout situation in college football, which is just going wild.
Well, this is Colorado's always crying poor. Everyone in the past, we don't have enough money, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Look, if you had a reasonable buyout on this, Carl Durrell was the Miami Dolphins wide receiver coach. He was hired. He hadn't coached college football since 2007 at UCLA. His 5 years at UCLA, he won 6-6, 10-7-6. He's the wide receiver coach. He had previously been with the Jets. He did a year at Vanderbilt as like a as an OC, Houston Texans, Dolphins before that. Like, he's just a guy out there. And why would you give a contract to just a guy that it gives you a, that guarantees that much money?
No idea. Did he get a renegotiation after 2020?
Yes. Yeah, I was just about to say.
Why'd you do that?
He was a Pac-12 Coach of the Year or something like that.
He went 4-2.
Let's look at it. Here's the deal on that. They played 4 games. They were 3-1, and he was the Pac-12 Coach of the Year because the Pac-12 didn't play any games. And if that's when he got a renegotiation, they played 4 games.
No, they played a bowl game.
No, did they?
Texas, they lost. They played 6 games.
6?
That's not a whole lot better.
They lost to Utah. They lost to Texas.
Oh, they did play 6.
They played San Diego State, too.
He went 3-1 in conference.
Yeah, 3-1 in conference. It was 4 conference games.
Yeah.
Why are you renegotiating? Where is he going?
They only lost the bowl game by 32.
And this is the problem. If you're sitting here now, let's say this guy is a reasonable buyout, like whatever, $3 million, which is still incredible. Like, dare him to go. You're looking to get back on the churn. This is why they should go with they should have just gone up and taken somebody out of the FCS or something and pay him low. Stop giving these buyouts like you're worried that William Christopher Sweeney's going to leave. Yeah, you got that guy? Sure. Or you got, even then, they're going to go. People are going to go. Like, enough with the buyouts. There's no guarantee on either side. Where are you going? And if they were sitting here right now saying, hey, next coach, we've got $7 million squirreled away here because we're not giving it to the last coach for improved assist, coaching salaries or use of a private plane so you can get around the West easier or whatever infrastructure you need. Instead, it's like, we just blew that money. It's a bad hire and a bad contract.
Does this make you guys feel any better? I'm reading about his contract now. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Durrell accepted a 10% pay cut of his total salary.
Thanks. Colin Durrell's a nice guy. But, great. Thank you. There's no fans. Yeah. I mean, you know what? You only had to coach half the season.
Right.
Amazing. $11 million. It's just a dumb buyout. It's bad athletic directoring. It's bad. And it's just the business. It's not just Colorado. It's all of them. Stop acting like they have all the power. Yeah, certain guys do have some power. This isn't it. You're right. Colorado pulling a guy off. Like, you couldn't have gone to any other wide receiver coach in the NFL. Said, hey, you want to be a Pac-12 head coach? Like, you're basically just rolling the dice saying any of these guys, I don't know. Like, what was Carl Durrell doing with the Dolphins?
Yeah.
I think they sucked in 2019, didn't they?
Probably. They've sucked a lot lately.
They've sucked a lot. Let me throw in a correction.
If you want to get Bienemy and say, look, you're the OC of the Chiefs. You're our guy. We know presumably should have happened like years ago, but eventually you're going to get an NFL job. We want you to leave the NFL. We are going to get a splash. We're going to get Patrick Mahomes' offensive coordinator. We are going to have to pay you. I get that. But not when you're just plucking a rant. That's the OC of a team that could win the Super Bowl and has the best, pretty good gig just coaching Patrick Mahomes the next X number of years.
Just a quick point here. He did not get an extension or anything. It doesn't appear after being the coach of the year.
I don't know what happened.
And let me do another correction here. Although, I mean, it's not that big, but the buyout of 11.4 includes what he was paid this year. So I guess the buyout's more around $8 million, it looks like. Okay, not that, right. I mean, still, it's absurd. But I mean, still a buyout that much is absurd. But it would, you have to subtract what he made already this year. And we're, three-fourths of the way through the year. So you can do the math. And, it's around like $7.8 to $8 million buyout. So, again,
still crazy. I apologize to the maybe I should. You guys fed me bad info.
I did. We did. It's all right. It's still an $8 million buyout. Come on. It's crazy.
Good for Carl Durrell, man. I'll tell you what. You're sitting there a couple years ago. you're coaching the Dolphins, this wide receiver team, this Brian Flores, things aren't going really well. And all of a sudden, Colorado, and now you're sitting there going, Maui.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I mean, they did give him a five-year contract that went 3.2, 3.4, 3.6, 3.8, 4. I mean, that's pretty good for a wide receiver coach to suddenly get.
Pretty interesting. All right, well, we'll see what happens there. All right. Saturday night in Tuscaloosa. So this is funny. We've talked about the television, the way they, the draft that, that networks have on their, how they pick television games. And one of the contracts has CBS's SEC deal is they are allowed to pick a game and put it in prime time every year. And they can pick any CBS can pick any SEC game, put it in prime time. And what did they pick this year? Texas A&M and visits Alabama. That's because last year on May 19th, the night before, or maybe that day, Nick Saban had gone to some speaking deal in Birmingham. He's sitting up on stage, and he got kind of forgot he was getting filmed, and he said Texas A&M bought every player on the team. Which sparked a furious reaction in College Station. Jimbo Fisher called Nick Saban a narcissist. He said he should have been slapped or beaten as a child. He's told everyone to ask how he got to be this football god. He implied, it wasn't an implication. He stated as fact that Saban had been cheating or violating some unknown rules for years.
Yeah.
He went after the king. And so everyone thinks this is going to be the biggest game. A&M's got the number one recruiting class. They beat Alabama last year. They beat them on National Signing Day. Jimbo is frothing at the mouth. Saban has to slink it back. But you know, oh, no. It's right there in the back of his head. Here we go. So CBS uses one of its primetime broadcasts on this game. And what do we get? Alabama is a 24.5 point favorite. The A&M fans are in a shell, just hoping they don't get trucked. Bryce Young may or may not play. He has a sprained shoulder. One of the reasons he may not play is because Saban's probably better off saving him for next week's game at Tennessee, which is a bigger game now.
Yeah.
Pat, what the hell happened?
College football happened. That's what happened. A&M, hey, we know it. Somebody in the top 10 is going to flop every year. And this year we might have more than one, but A&M right now is one of the leading contenders to be that flop. I didn't really love that team coming into this season to begin with. I thought they were too young at too many positions. And boy, I did not expect their offense to be the absolute flaming catastrophe that it has been so far. They got no good quarterback play. Their best receiver is injured. People are just killing Jimbo for A, still calling the plays. And he said he should be delegated. He should have a more modernized offense with a younger coordinator. Everything now, like Jimbo can't do anything that's going to meet the approval of the fans unless he beats Alabama again. But so that place has just become an absolute dumpster fire of repercussions there. It's funny. I'm still going to the game because I want to see if Alabama does try to step on the throat, and I want to see who's the quarterback for Alabama, whether they do play Bryce Young or not.
Jalen,
that injury, we'll see. You know what? The throwing shoulder, you don't like to see a throwing shoulder injury. If it's the other shoulder, you can do some things there, but I don't know. That could be an issue going forward. So it is wild, though, that between that game and Red River, we're talking about TCU and Kansas. Like, what the hell happened? College football.
Mm-hmm. Do they need Bryce Young to beat Texas A&M at home? Probably not.
Amazing.
They probably don't. A&M can't move the ball at all. And so it's not like you can you need to score that many points, I don't think. So, yeah, if they want to, I'm sure they don't want to necessarily take that chance and let him sit. But if for whatever reason he can't go, I'm sure the spread on the game would drop a little bit, would change. But But I would think they would not, to win the game, I would think they would not need him. And that's how far that that the Aggies have fallen. It's probably been the biggest right disappointment of the year of any team, probably the Aggies. So I'm actually, as it would turn out, I'm in Tuscaloosa right now, passing through, and I think a lot of people here are excited to see 50-14. I don't think that old Nick has forgotten, and I don't think he's going to be calling off the dogs necessarily.
The offense obviously is not good. Max Johnson has taken over. They're on two QBs. Does Jimbo need to stop calling plays? What do we do there? How about the defense? Like, they lose Mike Elko, takes over the Duke job, and they're giving up well over 300 yards a game. Mississippi State ran for 144 on them, averaged 6 yards a carry.
That's unbelievable.
Mississippi State
doesn't run.
They don't want to run.
No.
But he's, you know, so Alabama might be able to just line it up and let's go. We're just going to push you around. Big game. Tickets as low as $80 to get in. Now, that game would have been huge, even bigger. So line's now 24. We'll pick all these games later in the week, of course, in the race for the case. But Jimbo, something's got to give it. A&M, they still owe him $84 million. Talk about buyouts. Honestly, I'm sure they could. You never tell a Texan they can't come up with the money.
Oh, yeah. Watch this.
I was once doing a story with Jerry Jones got into the boxing industry. He was getting into boxing. He was hosting these big boxing matches at AT&T Stadium. Like Manny Pacquiao a couple times, and he said he was in this kind of bidding war with Vegas, and he goes, I can outbid him. And then he goes, hold on, I don't need the headline. Jerry Jones thinks he's got more money than Vegas. he says, it's off the record. I guess I'm taking it on the record. It's funny. He goes, but I might. I don't know. That MGM Internationals does all right, too. But he might. But he did get those fights. Anyway, it's got to be staff shakeup. I don't know. They got a ton of talent coming in. They're still winning recruiting wars. I mean, I'm not ready to give up on Jimbo Fisher, but a lot's got to change. He has the runway because I don't see how you can fire him. Even if you come up with that money, that would just be obscene.
Yeah.
That would be gross. I mean, that would be disgusting.
Yeah. How about we just rebuild, like, you know, 73 schools in the state? $84 million. Can we come up with something better to do than make Jimbo go away? He's not that.
Is this going to be interesting in the offseason to see how much pressure he gets to hire a play caller? Probably for the last 20 years, even when he was an assistant, he called plays everywhere. So I'm sure he's not going to relinquish that duty very easily. So, even going back with Saban on the staff at LSU, you know, he called plays. So, I mean, it's 20 plus years of play calling. Good luck to the person, maybe Ross Bjork, who has to tell Jimbo, Hey, time for you to give up that duty. Cause he wouldn't think he's going away quietly with that.
No, it's interesting. I read an interview with him, you know, some questions were asked about that earlier this season, and maybe he was just trying to get through the interview, but he's like, yeah, I'd consider it. I'd be open. And, you know, we'll look at it. You know, but that might be one of those things where you just say what people want to hear so that you can keep moving.
Yeah.
I don't know. But.
And then the other one is the noon game, Oklahoma, Texas, Red River. This game, Oklahoma's 3-2 and limping in. Texas is 3-2. Someone's leaving with three losses. There's so little excitement about this. I'm not even worried about any of the fans shooting each other Saturday night. And that's, I mean, usually someone gets got at the end of this game, and I don't even think anyone gives it enough. And I don't know why you people watch the games together. This is usually where the problem happens.
Right.
It was a mixed party of OU fans and there you go. There's the warning sign. Y'all get drunk and then you watch the game together and then someone shoots the other one so bad they can't even call it the Red River Shootout anymore. They have to call it the Red River Rivalry. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I think if you sit there and say, hey, you know, let's say Texas wins or, you know, the Sooners suck, the Sooner fans will be like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty bad. It really is. Like right now, Oklahoma's tied for last in the Big 12 at 0-2. And Texas is 1-1. It's like, again, the shocking thing is that the game in Lawrence, Kansas is exponentially bigger than this. Either TCU or Kansas is going to be 6-0 after this weekend. And if you are in the Big 12 and you're not Texas or Oklahoma, how much are you loving the schadenfreude of this? Of just those are the schools that are jilting us and they don't matter. They didn't matter last year. It was Oklahoma State against Baylor in the championship game, and it was a hell of a game. This year, it very much looks like neither of those two teams are going to be involved in the championship again. And you could have Oklahoma State right now in the top 10. You've got TCU, Kansas, and Kansas State all ranked. They will miss. I said this in the Dash this week, that Brett Yormark, the only time he will miss Oklahoma and Texas at this point is when he's at the negotiating table trying to get a new TV deal. Other than that, hey, competitively, we're okay. We don't need you. Pretty wild.
Yeah, they're not going into the SEC on fire right now, which I'm sure the league isn't thrilled about because they would want them to do much better. I'm looking at the Big 12 standings and it's just funny, you know, the four undefeated teams in conference in the Big 12, Kansas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, and TCU. Just, you know, it's, fairly shocking. That league down the stretch is going to be really fun. And I know we'll talk about it later, but Kansas and TCU meeting with the Big 12 basically lead on the line. It's hilarious.
We'll talk about that, the race for the case later this week. Yeah. So I will say this, though. Quinn Ewers expected back. We will see. That is what's interests me because he was really good at the beginning of that Alabama game. And
it's true.
Texas's entire season can change pretty quick and do it. So here's what I want to do right now, though. We've got some song. I want to take a song and we're going to try to make it big. Okay. This is a good song.
That we're going to be the vehicle to make a song viral.
And it leads into a people's court. Yes. I don't know if we have the vehicle. I don't know. There's better podcasts. I mean,
given our massive global and interplanetary reach, we are influencers. I think we got a chance. Yeah.
We are influencers. And there is a musician in Nashville, Tennessee. I may mispronounce his name, Chase Kamala. And he has written a song, an ode to the SEC sorority girl. Okay. It's an ode to the SEC sorority girl. The song is just called SEC. And this should go huge this year. This should go huge. Producer Sean, can you play Chase Kamala's SEC? I'll tell you when to stop because it gets slight. We don't need to do the whole song. It's not very long, but it gets a little repetitive. Can you play this for everyone? If this isn't your number one song, you know they have a song of the summer? This should be the song of the fall.
Okay.
I would love to play this song.
It's great. It is great.
She goes to college in the SEC, in a get up just to go out just so she'll be seen. She only pulling up if she's drinking for free. She goes to college in the SEC. You know the type I'm talking about. She balling hard with daddy's money in her bank account. She never had to worry about degrees. She's scraping by with 2.5 in a sorority. Auburn or Bama, Gators or Vols. If you know one, you know them all. Goes to college in the SEC, in a get up just to go out just so she'll be seen. Yeah, frat groupie, all for the team. Only pull up to your party if you're SAE. She goes to college in the SEC, in a get up just to go out just so she'll be seen. She only pulling up if she drinking for free. She goes to college in the SEC. Yeah. Don't waste your time. She's got a type.
QB or PhD, she wanna be a trophy wife. And she's a 10, like, out of 5. She'll catch your eye and then she'll wreck your entire life. Georgia, Kentucky, or Miss LSU, Texas A&M, and Mizzou. Yeah, she goes to college in the SEC.
All right, we can cut it. SEC, brilliant. You can find it at Apple Music, Spotify, anywhere you want.
Brilliant.
How did you latch onto this?
I have sources. Sources.
Okay.
I sent it to Sean the other day, and he just goes, oh, my. Just text back, oh, my.
It sounded...
The 2.5, like, the outfit to be seen.
QB, PhD. I like
QB
it.
QB or PhD, trying to be a trophy wife, the whole bit.
Yeah, she's only pulling up if she's drinking for free. She's
drinking for free or SAE, which apparently is, is that the cool frat? I don't know.
Yeah.
Ross, explain this.
Yeah, Ross. Ross went to an SEC school. Yeah. I went to Missouri when it was a Big Eight school, so I can't.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. That's wonderful. Yes, SAE was. It was. In fact, the I went to Mississippi State, and the SAE house at Mississippi State was the, by square footage, I believe this is right, by square footage, it was the biggest frat house in either the nation or at least in the SEC, but in the nation, in like, they wouldn't shut up about it. It was just, that was the thing they talked about. Our house is square footage wise, it's the biggest, you know? But I don't think it was even the biggest as far as members fraternity at Mississippi State. That was Kappa Sigma or Pike, which had their houses right next to each other. And they would constantly fight and do things to one another's car or the house itself, knock off rear side view mirrors. It was like always something. They were always fighting. It was typical.
Like the Ole Miss frat fight in the stands there? That was
a good brawl the other day. That was the funniest thing
somebody
I've
ever seen. Somebody in the news conference asked Jackson Dart about the fight. Like, hey, what do you think about the fight in the stands? He's like, what? What are you talking about? I was playing a football game on the field.
Yeah.
Like, what?
They all went in their blazers, man. You were,
well,
of course. You normally see 20 guys ready to throw down in blazers. I kind of respect it.
That is an SEC frat move, is wearing the blazer to a game.
Well, this song to me will be, I think, even though it makes fun of the SEC sorority girl, I think it'll be embraced by them. I think that they just need to flip it around and be like, yeah, I go to school in the SEC.
Sure. And, there should be a little veritas there. Yeah.
There's a lot there. There's a lot of popularity. These schools are very popular. The Bama rush thing is surging applicants and stuff. Like, they want the whole thing. So,
This is. This is actually our second SEC sorority story we've covered on the pod.
Well, I have another.
Oh, God. Okay.
People's Court.
All rise. The Honorable Judge Wetzel. Judge 40, and Judge Dellinger presiding. This is the People's Court.
Oh.
If the People's Court this, I don't know all of the inner workings of the sorority influence here. I do know this woman is in a sorority. I believe she's a Delta Kappa, maybe. I don't know. I think that's the one. Anyway,
get up on your Greek language. Come on, Dan.
I took Greek and I know all the letters. Yeah. That was the one thing I learned. It was no use taking Greek except when you went to college, you knew all the fraternities.
By the way, as we're talking about this, I'm in downtown Tuscaloosa in my hotel. I've got a window out onto the street. It's like the main street. It's like the downtown area. And there was just like 8 women coming out of a building, all with sorority shirts on. So
there you go.
Look right
there. We go.
I know.
Here's the thing. All of our listeners are now stuck with that SEC song in their head.
Oh, for sure. I am totally. Yes.
Yeah.
It's catchy. It's catchy. All right. Anyway, Ole Miss homecoming election.
Oh, here we go.
All right. This is going to be there is a controversy. Now, first off, very interesting. They have you vote for Miss Ole Miss, Mr. Ole Miss, and then there is another one for homecoming queen. 3 elections. I guess it's like lieutenant governor. Anyway, there was a vote. They've crowned a champion. Harrison Foxworth was Mr. Ole Miss.
Of course.
Yeah, that's the most Ole Miss name ever. Harrison Foxworth. Did you make that up?
No, I did not. He won every
Golly.
Year.
Golly.
Yeah. Harrison Foxworth. I believe he's from a well-toned suburb of Jackson. No, I don't know where Howison's from. It's probably from out. Lydia Robbins was Miss Ole Miss. And Eliza Peters was elected homecoming queen. But here is where we get the controversy. We had a previous candidate named Jenna Kripe. Sorry, Jenna, if I am mispronouncing your vote, your name. But Jenna Kripe, she should have qualified for the runoff. This is elaborate rules, as we mentioned on the Alabama homecoming controversy. She had received 34.98% of the vote, was in second place, should have gotten into the runoff, but then this happened. She was disqualified from the election for breaking her campaign budget. She exceeded the allotted limit of her campaign budget. There is campaign spending reform at the Ole Miss homecoming. You can only spend $750, okay? Which is good because God knows how much money they would have spent. Like a U.S. Senate race at this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
However, this was the issue. Kripe was running on a campaign of discussing mental health. Okay? So she had a whole campaign and she was trying to bring mental health discussions to the students. She had put up this billboard thing, kind of interactive bulletin board where people could talk about how they feel. It exceeded the sign size limit, again, this is in the rules, of 72 inches by 30 inches.
Mm-mm-mm.
Okay, so because of this interactive bulletin board she put up to try to promote mental health discussions, she got fined $100, and the fine blew her past the 750 limit, and then she was disqualified.
Wow.
Kripe was going to appeal this, but I don't... Daily Mississippi has been covering this, the Daily Mississippian, but there was no real follow-up. They just did the thing, and Kripe, I don't know. Kripe seems to have moved on with her life. Good for her. So, Justice 40, is it fair to disqualify an Ole Miss homecoming queen candidate because they blew the budget when the reason they blew the budget was a fine? You weren't expecting this one today, were you?
No, I wasn't. I was not. I was busy looking up Harrison Foxworth, I have to admit, who's from Columbia, Mississippi, down near Ross's territory at the south end of the state. And the interesting thing that right next to Columbia, Mississippi, is the town or the unincorporated community of Foxworth, Mississippi.
There you go.
He's got people. Yeah. Anyhow, to answer your question, Dan, when you were talking about something as sacrosanct, as holy, as sacred, as vital as the Mississippi homecoming election, there have to be rules, there has to be structure, and you cannot just go making a sign that's too big and expect to get away with it. I'm sorry that, no, she has to be out. Law and order has to rule here. I mean, you know, this is probably one of the biggest election stories of the fall. Certainly anything that's happening next month involving anyone else will pale in comparison to this. So we got to have some law, order, and structure. She's out.
Justice Dellinger.
I disagree. I don't understand how a fine can be. I mean, it's like being double fined, you know, that it would count against your expenses. I don't understand that. I not that I feel really sorry for this girl. I'm sure she'll survive and be fine. And she probably drives a BMW and her dad's a lawyer. And so she'll be fine.
Mississippi State hate there right there. But hear that? Little egg bowl got in there. Little dick. You don't know. This woman's promoting mental health discussion and
Not a BMW, a Mercedes. I'm sorry.
Goes to school in the SEC.
I was at the Oxford, you know, at the Ole Miss Kentucky game, and I was in Oxford, in the square in Oxford. I think I talked about this a little on the reaction pod, but it was wild, you know, in the square. And I tweeted out about it, you know, there was one in and one out at 7 p.m. at some of the bars. It was so crowded. And I had tweeted that there was a woman wearing a diamond encrusted crown strutting around the Oxford courthouse around the square. Lo and behold, the one wearing the crown was allegedly the homecoming queen, and she tweeted out.
Really?
Her name was Eliza Peters. She's like, yeah. I'm the girl wearing the crown.
No way.
So, how about that?
Oh, she was. All right, congratulations to everybody.
strutting her stuff. Yeah.
I feel this
it was
is
very Ole Miss.
So I think there's two things here. One, the fine shouldn't put you over the edge, but obviously taken to its logical conclusion, you could just keep getting fined. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's so, true.
And so, but I think maybe second
and daddy
fine,
would pay it.
Second fine could do it or something. I don't know. This seems to be, I'm kind of, you know, but then again, in the spirit of trying to win, it's about making like little signs with little, you know, bedazzled, hey, vote for, you know, Harrison Foxworth, right? It's not, I have an interactive bulletin board. Sounds, I don't even know how to get. So it's a tough one, but I would rule on the side of Jenna on this one. So Jenna, you didn't win homecoming, but you did win the People's Court. 2-1.
That's an outrage. The minority decision stands.
Soft. We're soft on crime. Soft on crime. They're going to, if I run for homecoming king, that's what I'm going to get.
Rules, mores, and structure. We need it in America. You guys just trampling on that.
All right. We still got a couple here. It's Fat Bear Week. It is Fat Bear Week. If you do not know, you haven't been listening. We've done this for years. We are influencers. This is now big everywhere. Fat Bear Week. And I think it's because of us. I don't think it's just because people love fat bears. Katmai National Park in Alaska is home to some of the largest bears on earth, the brown bears. The adult male brown bear is an average of 700 to 900 pounds and actually can hit 1,200 or so by fall. And now they're about to go in and have they're going to go hibernate, right? So they're eating up, and this is the time. This is when they are their fattest. So the people up there at Katmai have sponsored for a number of years here a chance to vote, and you can pick who will win be named Fat Bear of the Year. So it is Fat Bear Week, and so we make our selections. I have been correct on a number of times, and I'm claiming my guy again. I think it's
I have to tell Ross that Wetzel is so rigged this thing that he actually wanted to count the fat bear results in the race for the cake.
Yes, I thought at least a tiebreaker. At least a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
So you can pick. We have a number of the regular listeners. Remember, Chunk is back. Grazer Walker, I believe, won one time. Don't count out Holly. She's a big woman. That's a big woman, Holly. It's not easy to fight the men on this, but they do it. So who are you picking? But I want 747 again. He was named that just because they give him numbers, but the fact that his number was 747, he's a very large adult male. They have bios of all these guys. He has a block muzzle. According to the explore.org page, few brown bears ever grow up as large as the bear shares an identification number with a jet airplane. 747 was first identified in 2004. See, early. That was like ranking eighth grade point guards on Rivals. And they knew. They believe he has weighed at times 1,400 pounds.
Wow.
He often hangs out in a jacuzzi in Brooks Fall and just... Oh. He's very skilled and efficient angler, and nobody comes in there and messes for his fishing spot. So I get 747 because I identified him early. Also, Pat, who you picking? I would go Ross, but I think you need a moment, Ross, to
I'm
capture this still. Excitement.
Just catching up, yeah. Now I mean 747 looks like a great pick. I mean, again, like the ass on that thing is incredible. So your choice
really
is good there.
I'm
looking like Otis, who I think I've picked before, didn't look like he had a good offseason in the weight room, man. You know, he did not bulk up the way I would have hoped. So I am going to go with Divot. Divot is my pick. He might be a new one.
Newcomer, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm down with Divot. I like the name. I feel like he probably is creating divots in the ground when he walks. So I like Divot, and I think he's got a shot at pulling the upset here. He could be your bracket breaker.
Okay. Divot is that's a good looking, has a circular scar. Oh, it's a female too. Divot.
Oh, there
circular
we go.
Circular scar around her neck that remains evidence of her ordeal and reminds us that wild animals do not recognize our political boundaries. What is this? Wait a minute. Oh, she tried to escape.
Oh, the park boundaries.
Yeah, and they had to snare a noose. Oh no, a wire trapping snare.
Mm-hmm. Able to break free.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Divot for Pat. Yep. Ross.
These pictures. These are the same bear. This is shocking.
They really
yeah, put they, bear, I mean, they get skinny like and then they bulk up. Yeah.
They just sit there and eat salmon all day.
Wow. Wow.
They do some binging. They do.
They binge.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me I'm going to go with a lady too. I'm going to go with Grazer. Grazer, large adult female. She's defensive. She's got 2.5-year-old two and a half year old cubs. And you best not get close to the cubs, it looks like. She is mean and she is big. Give me the old girl Grazer.
All right.
128.
Sean Anderson?
I don't know. Here. I'm going with bear number 901.
That's
and this
one.
Bear should be listed as 911 because she's as big as an ambulance from what I'm seeing. My goodness, this is a massive bear. Big, broad shoulders, strength coming from the hips, and I mean, just round as hell. So I'm going with 901 with my selection.
It's a good choice, and we should let people know Sean Anderson is college football lineman size, so he knows what good mass looks like.
That's a 901 has been around. That's a good candidate. Man, boy, oh boy, that is a massive bear. All right, anyway, it ends next week, so it's just a quick one. But gettoexplore.org starts on the 5th, so I don't know what day you're listening to this, but it is big.
Get on
to
it.
Do all that. All right, and then finally, we have the story that was sent to us most often, easily. This is, we've been discussing lately the cheating in chess with the anal beads.
Can't get away from the story, can we?
Can't. College football has no rules anymore, so all of our fun cheating stories.
We have to outsource our cheating stories.
They were so much fun, and now they're not. We don't have it anymore, so we have to outsource our cheating outrage, if there's even outrage. Although there should be on this. So there was a fishing tournament in Cleveland called the Fall Brawl.
Okay.
Fall Brawl. Anyway, everyone knows competitive fishing is like oddly just big money, right? There's a lot going on here. So there was a competition in Lake Erie. You're basically getting walleyed, I guess, at this time of year. And these two guys that have been dominating, named Runyon and Kaminsky, are their two last names. They have been winning and winning and winning, and there's been a lot of buzz in the fishing community, the competitive fishing community, particularly in the Ohio circuit, that this doesn't, like, you just can't every time catch all the fish, right? Catch the biggest fish. There is some luck to competitive fishing. Obviously, guys are very skilled, and they would beat me in a fishing contest, but they're not just going to beat all the other guys. So there was some suspicions. The circuit actually had a filmed a put cameras on a few boats, like as a promotional video, and they actually won legally, apparently, 1 week. So that kind of made people think, well, maybe it was legit. But this time they show up at the place where you're going to weigh in your walleye, and there's like, if they get over 16.89 pounds, they can claim team of the year honors, and there's $30,000 in money in this. Okay. Chase Kaminsky and Jake Runyon. So they get there, and the guy who is in charge of it is named Jason Fisher. He's actually named Fisher of the fishing tournament. He sees their catch, and he, you know, these guys know the size of these fishes. So he looks and says, that's going to be that fish is about 4 or 5 pounds right there. They got five fishes. They're probably going to win it. They weigh the fish, and it comes in at five fish come in at 33.91 pounds. The first one was almost 8 pounds. And Fisher is looking and saying, that fish can't weigh 8 pounds. So, and people in the crowd don't know, and people start yelling. There's a great video of this. People are no effing way and all this stuff. Your fish are so much bigger. How is this? Everyone's, there's a lot of skepticism. So Fisher, and this is dramatic video, dramatic, calls for a knife. And while they're filming, takes the knife and cuts open the fish and then declares, as these two these chunks of lead weight come out, yells,
oh my
we've
God.
Got weights in the fish.
Oh, my God.
Are Additionally, you there were other pieces of chopped up fish, like fillet, that they would put in there, presumably so that the weights wouldn't rattle. They were stuffing extra meat in their fish.
Jesus.
So you got to watch this video. They're ready. The rest of the fishermen are all like yelling at them, get the hell out. You are. They're calling them names. It looks like they're going to get dragged and beaten, which they probably deserve. I mean, there's 30 grand on the line here.
Yeah.
Wow. And so these two guys are basically busted. And Fisher is very long story. Great story by Jay Busby on Yahoo. Just type in Jay Busby, Yahoo Sports. With the whole thing. And it is an elaborate cheating scam that they were stuffing weights in fish. Pat, you're a resident fisherman. Your thoughts on this? And should these people be like taken out into Lake Erie and just drowned? Should there be death penalty on this?
Yes. Let's start with that. Just take them out there, right? Tie all their lead weights that they stuffed in the fish to their legs and do away with them.
It's only a couple pounds. So it's probably.
I know. We need more weight. We need a little more weight, but get it done. This is what you get with walleye fishermen. They can't be trusted. Bass fishing, much more honorable pursuit. Go out there for the walleye. You know, I mean, they're throwing these ridiculous lures anyway. Now, if you want purity, you go with the bass fishing. You want whatever the hell, you go with the walleye fishing up there in Lake Erie and up there in the north. And it's not a noble pursuit like bass fishing. So I am not shocked, but still, yes, they should be drowned.
As a boy from the Gulf Coast, grew up doing Gulf fishing rodeos for snapper and tuna and the like. I think these fishermen should. I'll go one step further. Pat says tie the lead weights to them and drop them in the lake. I say do the same thing they did to the fish. It's time for those lead weights to go down the pipe. You got to swallow some lead weights, you know? So, that's cheating and there's money on the line. This is a capital offense.
People were yelling, "Where's your crown now?" We all effing knew it. You effed over a lot of people, man. Yeah. They've been doing this expletive for years. All the other fishermen were very, very angry. I fished in the Atlantic. I don't even get the idea of maybe of the competition. It's just get it and sell it. Part of what was bizarre about this, and one of the reasons they were suspicious is that they would often, after the fishing tournament, they'd have someone from like a soup kitchen there to take all of the fish, right? Mm-hmm. So the fish don't get wasted, and they would not donate their fish to the soup kitchen.
They've been doing this for like how much money have they won?
A lot. Wow. So the
scamming the whole walleye trail.
Yeah, the fall season starts on October 15th. According to this, there's 800,000 on the line, and this wasn't even. And it's a lot of these guys, like the fishermen, already have spent. Like they have $100,000 boats. They got all this stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're spending tons of time and all of that. But yeah, that was big. And then they started. So to help up on the suspicions, they've been giving dudes polygraphs.
Wow.
So the fish story, right? I mean, it's one thing to come back and be like, I caught this fish. It was this big, right? I mean, that's the story. Everyone, I was battling this monster, right? And then it got away, or I threw it back, whatever. But
no, there are a few things I think probably less honest than fishing in terms of that. Fish stories, the old trick, you know, when you catch something, you hold it as close, and you want a picture, you hold it as far away from you and as close to the camera as you can to make it look bigger. Right. You know, there's lots of tricks to the trade.
Other tricks is add ice into the fish. And then it weighs more, but it melts quickly so that if there is an investigation, it melts and you can't.
The evidence is gone.
Yeah.
But then you could reweigh the. I don't know. It's a lot of stuff. So look at it is getting nasty on Lake Erie. It is getting nasty. There are some angry Buckeyes out there ready to kill these two. And you know, stand your ground. I don't know. Jury of your peers. You might get it. All right. We've gone long, but we had to get through some of these. We have more crazies. We're behind on our crazies. We will be back, however, with Race for the Case later this week. We'll pick our games. Of course, we're going to play our annual Would You Eat It from the Texas State Fair. And we'll have updates on anything else. We're gonna take us out, Sean, with SEC, our new favorite song. The playing of Chase's song SEC. I hope it goes big. I hope it is blaring and driving. People are singing along at SEC tailgates everywhere. Do it up. We'll keep subscribing. Share us on social media. Share the song and tell your friends about us. And we will talk to you later. Only pull up to your party if you're SAE. She goes to college in the SEC. And I get up just to go out just so she'll be seen. She only pulling up if she drinking for free. She goes to college in the SEC, yeah. Goes to college in the SEC, yeah. Don't waste your time. She's got a type. QB or PhD, she wanna be a trophy wife. And she's a 10, like, out of 5. She'll catch your eye and then she'll wreck your entire life. Georgia, Kentucky, or Miss LSU. Texas A&M and Mizzou, yeah. She goes to college in the SEC. And a get up just to go out just so she'll be seen, yeah. Frat groupie, all for the team. Only pull up to your party if you're SAE. She goes to college in the SEC. And a get up just to go out just so she'll be seen. She only pulling up if she drinking for free. She goes to college in the SEC, yeah. Arkansas Razorbacks, rip your heart out, bandy girls are good at that. Shoot your shot, but she ain't gonna hit you back. If you know one, then you know them all. She go to college in the SEC. And a get up just to go out just so she'll be seen, yeah. Frat groupie, all for the team. Only pull up to your party if you're SAE. She goes to college in the SEC. And a get up just to go out just so she'll be seen. She only pulling up if she drinking with free. She goes to college in the SEC, yeah. She goes to college.